Music from all five countries in the British Isles. And starting next time, we'll be hearing music from the capital of each, starting with songs and music from and about London. Please join me, Graham Rice, for London Music on Sunday afternoon at 3.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Two Queens, offering coffee, tea, and bees. Located in Pete's Plaza, Narrowsburg, New York. TwoQueensCoffee.com. And from listeners like you.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. Did you know that Sullivan County has its own poet laureate? The first poet laureate for Sullivan County was Mark Blackford. I was able to catch a couple of his readings, and I thought he was quite wonderful. Last year, Lisa Calaro was the poet laureate, but last year was not a good year to be making public appearances. She did manage to do quite a few readings online. Today, my guest is the poet laureate for Sullivan County this year, Eric Balin from North Branch, New York. In the first half of the show, Eric's going to give us a little personal history. He's an artist, not only a poet, but a musician and a sculptor, and he's been practicing meditation for many years, which is, as how he says, he survives and thrives. In the second half of the show, we'll talk about the position of poet laureate, and Eric will read one or two of his poems. Please enjoy my conversation with Eric Balin. Eric, welcome to Catskill Character. I'm so happy to have you with me today.
Thank you, Donna. It's a real pleasure to be here.
You grew up in Durham, North Carolina. What was it like growing up there?
Durham. Well, it was a wonderful place to grow up. I grew up in a house that was surrounded by woods. So I was always surrounded by nature, and I love that aspect of living there. It was much different than I had since, as an adult, moved to New York, and it was so different than New York. And I loved growing up with the trees around. I spent every afternoon playing in the woods with my friends, and it was much lower key than, say, New York. It's closer to the Catskills, actually.
Yeah, it sounds very much like the Catskills. I once interviewed someone who said that they didn't ride bikes, they rode horses, which I found so fabulous. It appears that you had a lot of exposure to the arts while you were growing up.
I did. My parents were both interested in the arts. My mother was a potter, a ceramicist, and a very wonderful potter. And my father was he was a medical doctor, but he was a wonderful, wonderful musician. So I grew up with the arts and was always involved in making art, even as a young child.
What kind of art did you make as a young child?
Well, like every kid, I drew and painted. But then one day my mother brought home some clay because she was taking a course in ceramics. And she said, "Here, why don't you make something?" So I made this little cat. It was a fun little cat. It was really spunky. And I got a lot of great attention from this cat. And people said, make more animals. And so I started making animals of all kinds. I made elephants and hippopotamuses and all kinds of tigers and lions. And I went to zoos and I would photograph and draw pictures. And I would research. I was interested in every possible kind of animal, and I had this extensive menagerie of clay animals that I made, and I actually became quite well known in my community as the young clay animal artist. I actually had a show when I was 12 years old and sold lots of them, actually more than I've sold as an adult.
Wow, you had your first show at 12. That's pretty unbelievable. Do you still have any of these little clay figures?
I do. I have some of them in my home, and I gave them away. I sold them. My family has them, and they show up in lots of interesting places. They were originally made with very colorful glazes, And then as I got more sophisticated, I mixed my own bodies of clay and made these wonderful browns and deep chocolate colored clays and with more subtle glazes, because I was getting older and more sophisticated and kind of put away those bright colors.
Have any of these little clay figures been like the genesis of a larger sculpture that you did?
Not so much, really. I learned to really play and invent and use my imagination. So I think just as sort of the groundwork for using my imagination, they were in that sense they laid the foundation for later work, but not in specifically imagery.
When did you start to write poetry?
Well, I certainly wrote poetry as a kid, in grade school and throughout high school. I always loved writing poetry, but it wasn't until 2009, about 12 years ago, that I made this decision, a very conscious decision, that I would start writing poetry during my summer. I was a teacher, so I had wide open summers to do as I wished. And I said, I'm going to write a poem every day. And I did that, and I've continued to do that for the next 12 years. So I've written a lot of poems. Hmm. Some of them are okay.
That's fantastic. I mean, a poem a day. Some people might hear that and think, oh, what's the big deal? It is a big deal.
Well, I didn't know what I was going to write a poem about. And I thought, well, this is how I started. I said, I'm going to close my eyes, and I'm going to, when I open my eyes, I'm going to write about the first thing that I see when I open my eyes. Hmm. And when I opened my eyes, I was looking at a blue towel draped over the porch railing. And I said, well, that's it. I made this commitment, and that's what I'm going to write my poem about. And so this blue towel suddenly unfolded with all kinds of interesting associations. I loved seeing this intense blue against the green landscape. And then stories started to unfold about where this towel had been and the feeling of wrapping the towel around oneself after a shower. And it just unfolded in this way, which surprised me. I said, I had no idea that this towel was going to become an interesting poem. And then I thought, well, oh, okay, if I can write about this blue towel, I could probably write about almost anything. So every poem started with a thing that was either in front of me or some event that had happened during that day or the previous day.
There's some of that William Carlos Williams influence we were just talking about earlier, perhaps.
Yes, some of that. Yeah, some of that, certainly.
So, Eric, you know, basically, you've been an artist all your life. You recently retired from the Parker Collegiate Institute in Brooklyn, where you taught for 37 years. Would you please speak to your experience as a teacher of not only art, but also meditation, and tell the listener how these two passions have intersected for you?
Yes, well, I taught for 37 years at Packer Collegiate in Brooklyn, and actually that total of 50 years altogether, because there were other schools before that one. And I loved teaching. I still love teaching. And I love that process of working with students and being present in those moments of discovery. I would create some kind of an assignment, some kind of project, and then it would unfold through their work, through their imagination. And I loved seeing how it would unfold for them and seeing those moments of, aha, oh, I'm discovering something that I didn't know about myself. I didn't know I could draw a hand like that. I didn't know I could create a painting like that. And so that being there within that, in the midst of that creative process, was so exciting. And then later on in life, I started meditating, and I discovered that meditation for me was this powerful means of centering myself and remaining steady. And so I would bring that into my teaching as a way of helping students steady themselves. And teaching itself became almost a meditative practice. I would start my classes with a singing bowl, which I thought, well, this is a little too new agey, but they loved it. They loved this process of just settling down, and they themselves would make the bowl sing or ring, and that moment of just settling down and stepping away from all the other things that they've just been doing. They've been running from math classes and English classes, and here they were now in art class. And they had this moment to just be quiet and just to settle down. From that space of quiet, there emerges this process of creating. So the two merged for me, and they became almost the same thing in some ways, that teaching meditation or the practice of meditation became foundational to my teaching, as it is for me in my life.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I was going to ask you the next question, how do you manage all the different skills that you have? But I think you answered my question, because meditation, you said, centers you. And I guess what you do is you get centered, and then you work on whatever it is that you're working on. You center yourself, and you might move to a different medium. Now I'm going to ask you if you would please read a couple of your poems, and maybe you could start with Standing at the Midpoint of the Calicoon Bridge.
And I'd love to. Thank you. I wrote this one this past year, and I love that bridge going across from Calicoon to Pennsylvania. Standing at the midpoint of the Calicoon Bridge. Standing midpoint on the bridge's roadside stretch, the breath opening space of its span across the rippling amber green waters of the Delaware allows something closer to what birds see, to how birds move, to what birds know. For the moment, the roadway lightens, seems nearly to lift from its footed grasp on either end. I am released from any need to cross and reach the other side. Demands from the shore, all the necessary comings and goings, drift away in the breeze, float down the river, and finally out of sight. Left instead, something winged in me takes flight. Soars above the streaming river, rides along its sun-stippled current. I remain there for a time, knowing full well the necessary return. Even as I walk, sure-footed, back to shore, something in me remains with the birds in flight, loving the lift and curve of the wind. Friend, when the pull of the land grabs hold of your feet, head back to the bridge, and just for a little while, standing at the midpoint, fly with the birds.
I love that.
Thank you.
Fantastic. I can almost feel myself on the bridge, ready to just leap into the air. You know, do you ever write poems? People ask you, would you write a poem about such and such? Because I was thinking as you were reading that, you know, the Skinner's Falls Bridge is at a crossroads now. It's been closed for years.
Yes.
And they're contemplating what to do about it. And, you know, I'm horrified at the idea that they want to expand it so they can have trucks.
Mm.
I think that bridge needs an Eric Balin poem.
I shall go there and write one.
Okay, you got to go there and feel it first, right?
Yeah, I was there not too long ago and saw, yes. Oh, I will.
Great. Do you have another short one perhaps you could read before we take the break?
Sure. So as I say, I write things about just the simplest of things that happen during the day. Often they're in the morning because I write in the morning, so I need some material. So what just happened? So this one's called Washing Blueberries in My Hands. I took a handful of berries from the plastic container and cradled them carefully under a stream of water from the faucet. This was the simplest of acts, not headline worthy, nor grist for an interesting morning conversation, except that nothing else existed in that moment, which is alive still as if I had been a berry among them, jostled under a rushing stream of water, bouncing against the other small orbs, dark purplish blue just on this side of ripe, delighting in the temporary splash pool formed by the open-fingered cage of my hands. The water washed over and then drained through the in-between spaces. I shook my hands together like a muted rattle. The berries settled like kids at a summer poolside after vigorous play. There was nothing momentous about this small act, except how it mattered and became a headline for my day. How the generous giving of attention lifts and sanctifies small things.
I love how in the moment your poetry is. When people say you have to live in the moment, your poems are so in the moment. Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back, okay?
Okay, very good.
This is Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and after a few messages, I'll be back with today's guest, Sullivan County's Poet Laureate, Eric Balin.
Support comes from the Homestead School, Montessori education, preschool through early college with campuses in Glens Bay and Hurleyville. Building the intelligence, creativity, connection, and skills for an ecological future since 1978. Homesteadschool.com. From the River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York, riverreporter.com. And from listener donations at wjffradio.org.
When former Attorney General Bill Barr testified in his deposition, shown this week, that the 2020 election was not stolen, he referenced a slick piece of disinformation making the rounds.
I haven't seen anything since the election that changes my mind on that, including the 2000 Mules movie.
All things disinfo on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Give Me Liberty. Radio Catskill is on the move. The Janice Adams Show is too. Join me for a look back as we move forward. Revisit freedom sites and scenes in New York and Pennsylvania. Recall times when confusion reigned and hatred ruled. Remind ourselves what went wrong and what we got right. The Give Me Liberty Summerfest on the Janice Adams Show. Saturdays at noon on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. If you've just joined us, I've been speaking with Sullivan County's 2021 Poet Laureate, Eric Balin. In the first half of the show, Eric spoke about how he got started as an artist at a very early age, his teaching career from which he just retired after 37 years, and how he manages his time between all of his various artistic interests. In the second half of the show, Eric's going to tell us about what being the Poet Laureate of Sullivan County entails, what he's been doing as Poet Laureate, and hopefully we'll get to hear another one or two of Eric's poems. Here we go. Eric, how does one become the Poet Laureate of Sullivan County?
So I am the third Poet Laureate of Sullivan County. It's a role that was established by the Sullivan County Library Association 3 years ago. And there's a process. One applies for it. I saw an ad in the Sullivan County Democrat. First, my sister-in-law handed it to me, said, here, why don't you apply for this? And so I did, which involved sending some poetry, biography, and a statement of interest to the committee who selected some finalists. And then the finalists were interviewed. This was through Zoom, through a committee of the librarians and others who are poets and members of DVAA in Narrowsburg. And they selected me. I got a call and said, hey, you're it. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So what projects have you undertaken? I did some snooping on the internet, and you seem to have been very busy.
I have been busy. I just, the fact that I retired in June offered me a lot of time. So I just took it upon myself to, whenever there was an event happening in the county, I would try to find whoever was in charge of that event and say, hey, you want a poet? I'm here. So I started at the Calicoon Country Fair back in July, and then lo and behold, the Bagel Festival in Monticello. That was fun. I wrote a special bagel poem, and I also write songs. So I wrote a song entitled A Bagela, which was great fun. And I had some ukulele playing friends who accompanied me. And then onto the Calicoon Art Walk and the Jeffersonville Jamboree, where I wrote a poem for the annual Ducky Race. That was fun too. So I've had quite a variety of experiences. And then I also maintain readings on Facebook and Instagram 5 days a week, which is fun. And then also give some workshops at the libraries, either live or on Zoom, writing workshops and open mic workshops. So I've been doing a lot. I did a workshop for the students at the Homestead School in Glen Spey last week, as a matter of fact, and that was wonderful. I worked with the youngest preschool and early childhood kids, and we wrote poems together. It's been great for me. I've been having a great time.
What's being the Poet Laureate of Sullivan County? What's it meant to you?
Well, it's given me entree, first of all, to the community, and I've just met so many wonderful people. I've met a lot of the poets who live in the area. I've met all the librarians and the people in the arts community. And it's also just given me time to really think about and refine my own poetry and learning lots and lots of new poets that I didn't know. So it's afforded me this opportunity to really enrich my own life through poetry. And I guess I could just say that I think about poetry a lot and a lot more. And I love the idea that of bringing poetry to people and drawing poetry out of people. I wish more people would start writing poetry. It's a wonderful practice and it enlivens your life.
I have a friend who writes haikus every week on Facebook, and I look forward to reading them. Mm. Just add something for
absolutely.
Me.
Yes, absolutely.
Speaking of poems, I would love for you to read a couple.
Okay.
And just so you know, we have about 5 minutes, so we're good on time.
In that case, I could read the Pancake Breakfast poem.
Yes.
Okay. Pancake Breakfast at the Firehouse. What drew us there, beyond the magnetic pull of the phrase pancake breakfast, was the alluring bonus in the newspaper announcement with real maple syrup. We've been to many of these at fire stations, scattered among the local towns, each with its own version of pancakes, light and fluffy, dense and hearty, thin with a bit of chewiness. Like so many others, we are lovers of pancakes, especially those drenched in the real deal. And beyond the fundamental draw of this iconic breakfast, the events are a sort of joyful community theater, where normal roles are suspended and everyone plays a different part for the day. The volunteer firemen, mechanics, electricians, and farmers are nattily dressed in navy blue trousers, stiff white shirts topped with red aprons, doubling now as pancake chefs and waiters. The patrons, a mix of locals and weekenders, are both audience and actors in the play. They come as entire families with babies in tow and elderly couples bent with canes. They are salt of the earth folks and tattoo peppered hipsters from the city. Pancakes cut through layers of economic and social strata. Pancakes unite. We sit together at long tables and engage in light banter about the weather and where we come from. The women talk more than the men, and they keep the fare light and breezy. The electrician, fireman, waiter asks for our order, scrambled or over easy, and soon returns, having forgotten who had ordered what. Soon after, platters of steaming pancakes arrive, thin ones, almost crepe-like. The fellow to my left piles a stack high, rolls it, and wraps his over-easy eggs into the mix. He knows his pancakes. The woman next to him, an enthusiastic pancake maven, wants the recipe. All of us kindly pass the platters around and pour the syrup, which spills dark and golden down the sides of the metal pitcher. For 4 hours, the crowd streams in and out as steady as the syrup flows. And soon enough, the whole thing comes to an end. Like a circus tent, folded at the end of the day, the restaurant returns to just the firehouse. And a large crowd of happily fed actors returns to their respective roles. Pancakes bring a community together, the thing that everyone can love. Imagine a global event, the Great World Pancake Breakfast, where people of all persuasions and ideologies come together over stacks of pancakes with real maple syrup. The chefs and waiters would be lawyers and bankers, farmers and teachers, taxi drivers and politicians, all serving the mix of pancake lovers who sit down together, Jews and Muslims, Sunnis and Shiites, Northerners and Southerners. While passing the syrup, they would forget, at least through one final stack of pancakes, the towering importance of drawing rigid boundaries for themselves. Practiced often enough, the Great World Pancake Breakfast could bring a measure of unanimity to the planet. Surely, the maple trees would sacrifice even more of their treasured sweetness in the name of universal civility, and the headlines would ricochet around the globe. Pancakes with real maple syrup bring world peace.
What a great dream that is. Pancakes unite. Oh, I love that. How about a quick haiku or two?
Okay. I'm looking for my haiku selection. Morning citrus globe spills orange across the snow fields. Creamsicle sunrise. And here's another winter one. One of those snow squalls rolled in. High roller snow clouds dumped all its white cash in one flurry of spending.
Ah, fantastic. Eric, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate hearing about you and hearing your poetry. It's quite beautiful. I wonder if you could tell the listener about any upcoming appearances that you might have in the new year.
Well, the next one will be in January. I think it's Saturday, January the 8th at the Mamikating Library in Wurzburg. There'll be a workshop writing autobiographical poems. It should be great fun.
Thanks again, Eric.
Thank you so much, Donna. This has been great fun.
You've been listening to Catskill Character with today's guest, Sullivan County's Poet Laureate, Eric Balin. Eric's website is ericbalin.com. You can also find him on Facebook. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 11:30, right after Rosie Starr's Farm and Country. Tune in to hear more conversations with fabulous characters of the Catskills, right here on your favorite community radio station, Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Two Queens, offering coffee, tea, and bees. Located in Pete's Plaza, Narrowsburg, New York. TwoQueensCoffee.com. And from listeners like you.
WJFF Jeffersonville.
Juneteenth is a really specific thing. It's a celebration of freedom created by and for Black Texans. So now that it's a national holiday, do we really understand it? Let's ask Black Texas. I'm Kai Wright from WNYC. Join me for a live national edition of the United States of Anxiety. We'll party in Houston, learn history, and take calls from your own cookouts. The traditions and joys of Juneteenth.
This Sunday, Juneteenth at 6 p.m. here on Radio Catskill.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it. And thanks.
Make your donation now at wjffradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Neversink General Store, featuring an award-winning chef, smoked barbecue year-round, local products and catering, now offering takeout. NeversinkGeneralStore.com. And from listeners like you.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. W233AH Monticello.